This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, February 9th, 2010. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, 4 weeks after the earthquake in Haiti, some residents have still not received food. Others are surviving on rice alone.
We provide the rice. We cannot dictate what they do with that.
The UN confirms Iran has begun uranium enrichment, drawing a swift response and possible sanctions from the U.S. government and its allies. And we'll go to Sri Lanka, where violence and repression after last month's presidential election is on the rise, including the arrest of the opposition candidate.
Is he illegal and undemocratic? It's a violation of the Constitution.
Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Neil Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. U.S. troops began initial operations in southern Afghanistan today in advance of a major offensive in the town of Marja. NATO warned any civilians still in the region to keep their heads down. The Taliban prevented residents who had not already fled from doing so today, saying they'd already set mines along the surrounding roads. Many villagers had not yet evacuated the area for fear of leaving their crops. And in northern Afghanistan, officials say as many as 70 people are dead and more than 400 injured after an avalanche. Military helicopters are dropping food rations to stranded travelers, and rescue efforts are ongoing. India announced an indefinite moratorium on the commercial release of genetically modified eggplant, or BT Brinjal, today. Bismillah Gilani has more.
The government's decision to put a moratorium on BT Brinjal comes after a series of public meetings across the country. People turned out in large numbers and registered their protest against the plan to introduce the country's first genetically modified food crop. Environment Minister Jairam Ramesh announced the decision in New Delhi today. He said the government cannot ignore public sentiment.
It's a mindset change that we need to bring, that it is not necessary for us to clear everything that comes to us.
The minister said the moratorium will not be reviewed unless independent scientific studies establish the safety of the product for human health and the environment. Farmers' organizations and environmental groups have welcomed the decision. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
Prosecutors in the Philippines formally charged 196 people today in connection with a political massacre last November. Those charged include Andel Ampatuan Sr., a close political ally of the Philippine president. Along with the 195 others, Ampatuan is charged with conspiracy to kill members of a rival clan. 57 people died in the politically motivated attack. An immigration detention center for women in the UK remains on lockdown today. Detainees are protesting separation from their children, extended incarcerations, and poor living conditions. Naomi Fowler has more.
Protests at the notorious Yarlswood Detention Center are nothing new. The center holds 405 women and children who are guilty of no crime other than falling foul of immigration laws. Around 40 women are now believed to be in their fourth day of a hunger strike. Several who tried to escape out of a window are still locked outdoors with few clothes to keep them warm. According to one of the women, some have collapsed and have received no medical attention. Campaigners are calling for an urgent inquiry into the centre and the response of the authorities to the disturbances. The centre and the government have denied any ill treatment. Naomi Fowler, FSRN, London.
As the stalemate continues in the Palestinian-Israeli peace talks, Israel's army stepped up its operations in West Bank communities this week. Free Speech Radio News' Ghassan Banoura reports.
The Israeli military detained 16 Palestinian civilians during invasions targeting a number of West Bank communities today. And at the Shafat camp for Palestinian refugees in Jerusalem City, clashes renewed. One Palestinian boy was arrested, one Israeli soldier was lightly wounded. Yesterday, Israeli police raided the camp, injuring residents and arresting around 60 others. Meanwhile, the Israeli military continued its crackdown on nonviolent popular struggle organizers when Israeli troops ransacked the offices of the Stop the Wall campaign in Ramallah. On Sunday, soldiers attacked the offices of the International Solidarity Movement and arrested two international activists. They have since been released. Netta Golan is a co-founder of the ISM.
The crackdown on ISM and on Stop the Wall is a continuation of an arrest campaign of the leadership of the popular struggle, because it's clear that the popular struggle is gaining legitimacy and widening. They've done many things to try to stop it in the past, including killing people, and now they're using the violence to try to stop it. But obviously, they failed in the past, and they'll fail this time as well.
غسان بنورة أفسر من بيثلهم.
10 South African men in Colorado have filed a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission against Walmart. They say they were fired to make jobs available for locals. They also claim that they were denied prayer breaks. Walmart officials deny the claims. Walmart has been the focus of dozens of discrimination claims in as many years and is currently named in the largest class action discrimination suit in U.S. history. For Free Speech Radio News from WMNF Community Radio in Tampa, I'm Nell Abram.
This is Doreen Marina in New York. Today marks the 4-week anniversary of the devastating earthquake in Haiti, and food aid still remains a challenge. The World Food Program is currently operating 16 food and water distribution points throughout Port-au-Prince. American troops are in charge of the distribution of that aid with cooperation from UN forces on the ground. But as FSRN's Dolores M. Bernal reports, many Haitians are having to resort to selling some of the food they are receiving to supplement their diet.
Food distribution in Haiti has been full of bottlenecks, from complaints of inefficient bureaucracy at the World Food Program to problems transporting aid through these often congested and torn-up streets. Thousands of Haitians haven't received any food aid yet. Now, there's another concern: what to do with Haitians that sell the food they receive. Some Haitians have been spotted selling the rice they receive from the World Food Program. A Brazilian military official working with MINUSTA told FSRN yesterday that the UN is brainstorming ideas on how to stop the growing practice of selling the rice that is given to the survivors. Gladys de Hua is an earthquake survivor who has seen it happen.
What happens when a person gets a sack of rice? I mean the women. Since women are the ones getting the food aid, is that the rice is not going to be enough. So what she does is sell the rice and buys bread or something more nutritious for the family.
Rice is the main food aid offered through the World Food Program. Roberto Panivino is a contracted truck driver from the Dominican Republic. He has been hauling sacks of rice every day for 2 weeks from the World Food Program warehouses to the 16 distribution points in the country. Is rice all you guys are distributing?
Yes, for now, only just rice.
A lot of what?
A lot of rice. Lots, lots. That's why they are distributing the rice.
But aside from rice, Panivino says that there are warehouses full of other things.
There are cookies, so many other things, cooking oil, beans, but different types of beans.
For Peter Nuttall, a relief coordinator with World Concern, an NGO based in Seattle, knowing that some Haitians are resorting to selling the aid is not a concern.
As far as selling the rice, that is up to them. You know, as long as we give them the rice, then whether they decide to eat it themselves or to sell it on the market to get money to buy other food, that is up to them. We provide the rice. We cannot dictate what they do with that.
But the major concern remains, when will the food, any food, will get to the people who haven't received any aid? President Bill Clinton was in Port-au-Prince on Friday.
Many Haitians are saying that they're not getting any aid. I mean, is there anything that you guys are doing to try to speed up the aid to people?
Well, that's why I came down here today, because I'm trying to get to what the bottlenecks are. Part of it is just shipping the volume of food in here that's necessary. Part of it is that even with 16 distribution centers, which is an enormous stretch for the World Food Program, look how many people need food. A million? More? If we can get enough distribution mechanisms so they can begin to go into the neighborhoods, then I think we'll solve that bottleneck.
In addition to the World Food Program, numerous NGOs are distributing their own aid across Haiti. The aid is limited, but according to Nuttall, it's more than just rice. It includes sardines, beans, and spaghetti. Dolores M. Bernal, FSRN, Port-au-Prince.
Today, Iran announced that it has begun enriching uranium for use in a medical reactor. In a notification to the UN Monday, Iran said that it needs the fuel at a research reactor that produces medical isotopes for kidney, heart, and cancer patients. In response, the U.S. said that it will pursue renewed sanctions on Iran through the United Nations within the coming weeks. The UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, which had inspectors on site during the enrichment today, says that it is seeking clarifications from Iran on the production of materials and other technical details. A spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry told Al Jazeera that the work is moving forward, but at a measured pace.
We never said that everything will be ready in no time and that, for example, the 20% cycle of enrichment would begin on Tuesday. What we said was that we are preparing the ground for the necessary measures in order for us to produce 20% enriched fuel.
The action comes just 1 week after President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad expressed a willingness to negotiate on fueling the research reactor. The U.S. and its allies favor a plan to swap low-enriched uranium for fuel rods with Iran as a way of blocking Iran from building up stockpiles that could be used for bomb fuel. Speaking yesterday in Paris, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said that he hoped international sanctions would stop a need for a military strike.
The key is persuading the Iranian leaders that their long-term best interests are best served by not having nuclear weapons, as opposed to having them. And so I think that an approach along these lines, as long as the international community is seen pressing vigorously to resolve this problem, my hope is that we will then be able to keep this in economic and diplomatic channels.
That audio from Voice of America. This news also comes as Iran is preparing to mark the anniversary of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, which could mean renewed protests and pressure on the government that has intensified since last June's disputed presidential elections. The Sri Lankan president dissolved the parliament today, setting the stage for new elections to fill 225 seats. Meanwhile, post-presidential election violence is on the rise. Arrests, intimidation, killings, and repression of free speech have all taken place since Mahinda Rajapaksa was re-elected last month. International and local concern for safety of the arrested opposition candidate, former Army Chief Sarath Fonseca, is mounting. FSRN's Ponia Manikavasagam reports.
Post-election violence continues into the second week. On Monday, the army arrested defeated opposition candidate Sarath Fonseca, a former army chief. His wife, Anuma Fonseca, told reporters today she is not aware of Fonseca's whereabouts and is worried about his safety.
They came under army law. More than 150 army persons came in, abducted him and treated him as an animal.
The government says they arrested Fonseca for military offenses and he will face a court-martial. But the opposition political parties say it is an action against the political opponents. The political violence is mostly centered on a bitter confrontation between two top individuals, the incumbent President Mahinda Rajapaksa and his former army commander Sarath Fonseca. Both were once strong allies in the 25-year-long civil war against the Tamil Tigers. But they fell out over who was responsible for the victory, with both claiming credit and boasting of their roles in the war. Fonseca lost to President Rajapaksa, who had a sweeping victory in the January 26th election. He was arrested hours after he vowed to give evidence at any international probe into war crimes during the final stages of fighting against Tamil Tiger rebels last year. Earlier, the government has resisted international calls for an investigation of war crimes amid charges. Gotabaya Rajapaksa is the Secretary of Defense and also a brother of President Rajapaksa. He is considered to be very powerful in Rajapaksa's regime.
whether it is United Nations or whether it is any other country, I am not allowing any investigation in this country. There is no reason, there nothing wrong happened in this country. There will be no investigations in this country. Take it from me, I am the Secretary of Defense. Only thing that we have to do is to develop this country, bring peace to the country.
Opposition politicians accuse the government of clamping down on its opponents, citing the arrest of 37 ex-military supporters of Fonseca soon after the election. The government also sent 14 senior military officials on compulsory retirement who are suspected to have connections with the opposition candidate during the elections. Ranil Wickremesinghe is the opposition leader.
The arrest of presidential candidate Sarath Fonseca is illegal and undemocratic. It is contrary to the military law. It is contrary to the normal law of the country. It's a violation of the constitution.
Opposition leaders have called for a nationwide protest against the government for the oppression of politicians and the media while preparing to file a fundamental rights case in the Supreme Court against the detention of Fonseca. Meanwhile, media organizations took to the street on Monday to protest the continued threats to journalists by the government during and after the recent presidential elections. The Free Media Movement said a number of journalists working in state-owned media organizations were sacked for supporting the opposition candidate. It says two journalists were beaten while covering the election campaign and no arrests have been made. Dharmasiri Lankapeli is a media activist.
The government has banned the Lanka newspaper. Its editor is arrested and he is still being interrogated. Not only this, from time to time, journalists are abducted or arrested and media organizations are intimidated for criticizing the government for its corruption. It has become routine now in the country.
But the government has denied these charges. Anura Priyadarshana Yapa is the media minister.
The government has the responsibility to look after the media, but it is not involved in any of these matters. In the meantime, the police have taken action whenever there are complaints, so it is the duty of the police to investigate.
Parliamentary elections are scheduled for April. Some observers are concerned that the arrests and threats could continue, creating more unrest in the country. Punnayamanikavasagam, FSRN, Sri Lanka.
Voters in Costa Rica have elected Laura Chinchilla as the next president. The former vice president was elected with 47% of the vote over the weekend and will now become the country's first female head of state. During the campaign, Chinchilla promised to continue Costa Rica's free trade policies and highlighted fighting crime as a top priority by pledging to raise spending on security by 50%. She follows the welfare policies of her party, the National Liberation Party, but comes down conservatively on other social issues. She's against gay marriage and a woman's right to an abortion. To discuss what the election of Laura Chinchilla means for the Costa Rican people, we're joined by Nicole Filion Robin, Research Associate at the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, and Larry Burns, Director of the D.C.-based organization. Welcome to you both.
Hello to you.
Hi. Great to be here.
Nicole, let's begin with you. Chinchilla is closely related to outgoing President Oscar Arias. He's a president known for winning the Nobel Peace Prize and conflict resolution in the region, but his approval ratings dipped way low at the end. Will this help or hurt her in the eyes of the public?
I think up to now it hasn't really hurt her, as she tried to stray away from connecting herself with him during the elections and even criticized some of his policies. I think towards the end, the Costa Rican people have seen that free trade has not exactly brought prosperity to their nations as they thought it would. I think the connection between her and Arias will be more strongly criticized in her next years.
And you also write that Chinchilla represents rhetoric from the left, but policies from the right, and that she could be more of the same. What's the trend in Costa Rica as far as conservative or more liberal leadership?
I think she represents a more left rhetoric in that she wants to continue with the same welfare policies that Arias advocated for. But at the same time, she represents these right policies, like she's against, like you said, women's right to abortion and also gay marriage, which does not represent a movement towards gender equality in Costa Rica, which some of the major newspapers are trying to show this as a symbol of movement towards gender equality. And she's also against secular government, which, again, I don't think that can be seen as a progressive step for Costa Rica. As for the trend in Costa Rica, I think Costa Rica is viewed as one of the most democratic countries in Central America, but that is more of kind of a facade of what we are shown in Costa Rica in mainstream media right now.
Well, Larry Burns, let's continue with that trend here. What does this election mean for the future of Costa Rica, and what issues came out as important for the people there?
Well, first of all, we've seen an election that reflects a great deal of volatility and instability. For example, just a few weeks ago, in the polls, her ratings were over 60%. Now, she got in the 40s on election day, and the leftist candidate, Otón Solís, a person who we interviewed, and the results of that interview is in our on our website, COHA.org, his position, which was quite to the left, went from 19% in the polls up to 30%. He came in second. And the most conservative candidate in the race, a man named Guevara, a man who is very, very, very right-wing, he got below 20% of the vote. So she doesn't have a strong standing in terms of she was not a it was not a landslide victory. It was a significant victory. But the country's economics are so fragile that it's going to be relatively easy for leftist political forces in the country to leverage their attack against what essentially are pro-business and pro-U.S. policies.
And Otón Solís of the Citizens Action Party, the candidate you mentioned who came in second, he was the only candidate calling for an end to the free trade agreement, or CAFTA. So how much was the economy a factor in this race?
Well, I think it was a significant factor. The question is, how is that going to play on the average Costa Rican? As long as the agricultural products that it exports have a weak market, the free trade blessings are not going to be all that profound. And so she's not home free. It's going to be probably a difficult presidency.
Larry Burns is director at the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, and Nicole Filion-Robin is research associate at the D.C.-based organization. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Richard Shelby, Republican of Alabama, has dropped his hold on most of President Obama's 70 nominees. He made the move after receiving the attention from the White House he wanted in regards to two projects for his state, one a multi-billion dollar contract with Northrop Grumman. Some of the nominees have been blocked for more than a year now. With the process back on track, the Senate took up and rejected Obama's controversial nominee to sit on the National Labor Relations Board by a vote of 52-33. The debate over Craig Becker to sit on the board was a proxy debate on the Employee Free Choice Act, also known as Card Check. The measure, supported by unions and opposed by business, is also stalled in the Senate. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
Just hours before the Senate is set to vote on Craig Becker's nomination, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce sent a letter to senators urging their opposition. The letter included a strong message. The chamber may count this vote on their annual scorecard, which ranks members friendly to their pro-business causes, a tally that's used during campaign season. The letter said Becker would, quote, restrictively interpret employers' free speech rights to urge its workers to oppose organizing. The letter also said Becker would use the National Labor Relations Board to, quote, expand the use of strikes that disrupt the right of employers to maintain operations during labor disputes. In other words, opponents fear Becker will steer the National Labor Relations Board to favor unions. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona is one of the opposed.
You know, it's one thing to come from private law practice representing employers or unions as clients. It's quite another to come to the board directly from being an officer and associate general counsel of a labor organization with, as mentioned, substantial interests in multiple matters pending or that will be pending before the board.
Craig Becker is a labor law attorney. He's represented healthcare workers before the Supreme Court, and he currently is an attorney for the AFL-CIO and the SEIU, two of the nation's largest unions. Democratic Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois says Craig Becker is qualified for the job.
Are we going to say that anyone who comes to the National Labor Relations Board who has worked for a labor union is disqualified? Is that the position being taken by some? I hope not. That's fundamentally unfair. It's like saying anyone who owns a business couldn't be a member of the National Labor Relations Board. I wouldn't agree with that.
The NLRB was created in 1935 to foster collective bargaining and to protect workers from abusive labor practices. The board is supposed to be a mediator for labor disputes. Just as some have used the board to protect workers, union opponents have long used the board to protect employers. Because of its partisan nature, the party that's in power receives three seats. The minority party only has two seats on the board. William Gold is a professor of law at Stanford University. He was chair of the NLRB during the Clinton administration.
With all its imperfections, it is better for workers than nothing. The Republicans recognize this, and that they have no incentive to make the agency go forward. Contrarily, the Democrats have every incentive to make the agency exist.
Gould says the board has often failed to protect workers because of what he calls, quote, the lethargy of the board. In other words, inaction. He says workplace complaints can take years before receiving a decision.
The board has been harmed by political appointees who won't make decisions.
Opponents say that Becker will use his authority on the board to implement aspects of the Employee Free Choice Act, or EFCA. EFCA is a proposal stalled in Congress that would enable workers to organize by signing a card. Supporters say it would help eliminate strong-arm tactics used by employers to prevent organizing. The board currently has only two sitting members, one Republican and one Democratic appointee. Becker is one of three nominated by President Obama to sit on the board. All three were nominated in April. Becker is the first to receive a vote. The other two are considered non-controversial. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Today's headlines editor was Nell Abram. Washington, D.C. editor was Leanne Caldwell. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Scott Pham and Antonio Ortiz. You can visit us online at FSRN.org. You can send questions, comments, or news tips to comments at FSRN.org. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina.